When temptation comes knocking at our door, it's easy to think that we're the only one who struggles with private desires. For many, the secret remains locked up, sheltered from the shame or embarrassment of being found out. But today on Insight for Living, we'll discover that no one is immune from temptation at some level. In fact, even our biblical heroes wrestled with moral purity, with both wins and losses. Today's message comes from the four-part mini-series titled Staying Pure in a World Gone Wild, with biblical insight on how to say no when lust says yes. Here's Chuck Swindoll.
It seems the older we get, the more we can appreciate the wit behind Oscar Wilde's words. I can resist everything except temptation. The Irishman's quip cuts to the heart of a dilemma that torments us all, one the Apostle Paul had the courage and the honesty to confess. In Romans chapter 7, verses 21 to 23, he wrote these now familiar words. It seems to be a fact of life that when I want to do what is right, I inevitably do what is wrong. I love to do God's will so far as my new nature is concerned, but there is something else deep within me, in my lower nature, that is at war with my mind and wins the fight and makes me a slave to the sin that is still within me. In my mind, I want to be God's willing servant, but instead, I find myself still enslaved to sin. So reads the Living Bible. Beneath Paul's frustration and our own lies the problem James spoke of in James 1, verses 14 and 15, where we read, "But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust. Then when lust has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and when sin is accomplished, it brings forth death." Lust is not just desire. It's desire gone to seed. It's a bawdy, tempestuous, unquenchable craving for evil. In The Pursuit of Holiness, Jerry Bridges states, "Desire has come to be the strongest faculty of man's heart. The next time you face one of your typical temptations, watch for the struggle between your desires and your reason. If you give in to temptation, it will be because desire has overcome reason in the struggle to influence your will." If we are to win this battle for holiness, he continues, we must recognize that the basic problem lies within us. It is our own evil desires that lead us into temptation. We may think we merely respond to outward temptations that are presented to us, but the truth is, our evil desires are constantly searching out temptations to satisfy their insatiable lusts. Wise words, aren't they? Like Paul, we all get discouraged with doing evil when we meant to do good. We get frustrated trying to stop a Gulliver lust with a Lilliputian will. But how could we say no when lust begs, whines, and even bullies us to say yes? Is it even possible? Today we're going to look at a memorable example of someone who found a way to say no to lust. His name is Joseph. We'll find his story in Genesis chapter 39. Let me read that chapter from the New Living Translation. "Now when Joseph arrived in Egypt with the Ishmaelite traders, he was purchased by Potiphar, a member of the personal staff of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was the captain of the palace guard. The Lord was with Joseph and blessed him greatly as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. So Joseph naturally became quite a favorite with him. Potiphar soon put Joseph in charge of his entire household and entrusted him with all his business dealings. From the day Joseph was put in charge, the Lord began to bless Potiphar for Joseph's sake. all his household affairs began to run smoothly, and his crops and livestock flourished. So Potiphar gave Joseph complete administrative responsibility over everything he owned. With Joseph there, he didn't have a worry in the world, except to decide what he wanted to eat. Now, Joseph was a very handsome and well-built young man. And about this time, Potiphar's wife began to desire him and invited him to sleep with her. But Joseph refused. "Look," he told her, "my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I ever do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God." She kept putting pressure on him day after day, but he refused to sleep with her, and he kept out of her way as much as possible. One day, however, no one else was around when he was doing his work inside the house. She came and grabbed him by his shirt, demanding, "Sleep with me." Joseph tore himself away, but as he did, his shirt came off. She was left holding it as he ran from the house. When she saw that she had his shirt and that he had fled, she began screaming. Soon all the men around the place came running. "My husband has brought this Hebrew slave here to insult us," she sobbed. He tried to rape me, but I screamed. When he heard my loud cries, he ran and left his shirt behind with me." She kept the shirt with her, and when her husband came home that night, she told him her story. "That Hebrew slave you've had around here tried to make a fool of me," she said. "I was saved only by my screams. He ran out, leaving his shirt behind." After hearing his wife's story, Potiphar was furious. He took Joseph and threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were held. But the Lord was with Joseph there, too, and he granted Joseph favor with the chief jailer. Before long, the jailer put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The chief jailer had no more worries after that, because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him, making everything run smoothly and successfully.
Listening to Insight for Living. Helpful resources are available at insightworld.org. And now Chuck Swindoll on how to say no when lust says yes.
Preachers are often criticized for scratching people where nobody itches, answering questions that nobody is asking, and I think that this day is a day of exception, because I'm sure we have all itched in areas that have been scratched. I'm sure we have all had questions that have been answered. And we will continue to deal with questions in the area of temptation as long as we live. But tonight, at the risk of being a bit repetitive in some of the points that I made this morning, I would like for us to turn not to the New Testament, to James, but to the Old Testament in the case of Joseph, as we deal once again with a very practical and real problem of facing temptation. We're going to be talking about how we can say no when lust says yes. I hope the title does not shock anyone. Even though the people around you do not look like it, they wrestle with temptation just like you do. Even though it is a shocking and perhaps abrupt approach to a subject that often is dealt with in an intimate area of life, God speaks of it in a frontal and direct fashion. And I've chosen Genesis 39 on purpose. First of all, it is a passage of victory, not defeat. Normally, you would expect a person to turn to Proverbs chapter 7, or to David and Bathsheba, or to Samson and Delilah. And frankly, I get a little weary of those always being the cases in point when dealing with the subject of immorality, because I believe that the Christian has a great deal of hope. He can be strong. He can face what is commonly viewed as an area of inevitable defeat. And for that reason, I've chosen Genesis 39, also because the man is not the aggressor. In this passage, the woman is the aggressor, and I think that also is extremely realistic, though it is rarely emphasized. I want to say one more thing before we go into the passage and just work our way through it verse by verse, and then tie it all together with some applications that I feel that God would have us hear. I would like to make it clear once again that temptation is not always in the sensual realm. It would be wrong for you to leave the services of today thinking that the only way one could be tempted is in the realm of the sensual life. There are material temptations. You can be tempted by big things, as big as a home or as small as a ring. You can be tempted by things that appear very glamorous and dazzling, such as a new car, or be several hundred years old, such as an antique. You can be tempted by things just as really as you can be tempted in the area of the base desires and drives of life. There are also temptations that are in the personal realm. You can be tempted to want only the title of doctor, or professor, or president, or owner, or rich man, or whatever, even senior pastor. You can be tempted to want titles or positions or phases of things in life that are commonly considered respectable things. And your driving desire can be so obsessing that it becomes as lewd, if you please, as filled with lust as your drive for the opposite sex. But having said all of that, the illustration in the case of this evening is the case of a man who was tempted by a woman, but handled it victoriously. So wherever you may be, let's find the Bible and let's find the place and let's spend some time in these verses. To begin with, the first six verses lay a historical framework around the picture that is later painted. So let's consider the frame and then let's go to the picture itself, the actual temptation. We read in verse 1 that Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. If you're not familiar with your Bible, then those words are a jumbled set of words that really mean very little. If you are familiar with the story, you are again thrilled with God's marvelous care over his child. Joseph was the beloved son of his father, Jacob. He was hated by his brothers because his father was showing favoritism toward him. Joseph was a little bit unwise in the way he handled his wisdom and the ability to know the future, and the brothers turned against him, sold him to a group of people on a caravan going to Egypt, and when Joseph got to Egypt, he was bought by a man named Potiphar. Potiphar is called in verse 1 the captain of the bodyguard. I suppose he would be like the chief of the FBI in the United States. The bodyguard was the military force for the civil government of Egypt. And this man was the chief of the bodyguard. He was apparently a man of great respect, plenty of coins, a lovely place, a lot of slaves, cared for with great finesse, a lot of luxury. This man had in his number of slaves, a man by the name of Joseph. He bought another slave, and Joseph began simply as one among many. But look at what God did because of his hard work. Verse 2. And the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. One older rendering of the Bible renders verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a lucky fellow. That's a terrible translation of what this is really saying. The Lord was with Joseph, and he therefore became a successful man, not just because he was a believer, but because he was a hard worker, and God honored his hard, faithful diligence. As it says in verse 2, he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, and he became his personal servant. Ah, that's a promotion. He was just one among many. Now Potiphar discovers that is a unique fellow. I want him as my own personal aide. And so he was raised in rank from one among many slaves to a choice personal aide of Potiphar. He became the commander's assistant, and he was given the duties regarding the house of Potiphar. As it says in verse 4, He made him overseer over his house. That means he really trusted him. And all that he owned, he put in his charge. So Joseph, after an undisclosed period of time, was promoted from just being a normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill slave to a personal choice servant of Potiphar. Another success story is written, verses 5 and 6. It came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. And let me say, nobody knew that more than Potiphar. He kept his eye on the books and he saw that profit began to come in like never before. And so Joseph became increasingly more important and appreciated by Potiphar. Verse 6 puts the capstone on that story. He left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him around, he did not concern himself with anything. By the way, if you ever find a fellow like that to work for you, hire him and never let him go. As long as he was around, Potiphar's mind was free of worry. Don't think that the people at the top stay at the top free of worry simply because they are capable. Often those at the top of a company, organization, school, church, whatever it may be, are there and are doing a capable job because there are people beneath or working on the team that are making his work a joy and a delight. Potiphar became a success because Joseph was committed to Potiphar's success. Are you committed to your employer's success? Do you work hard under the Lord so that those over you will look good? That's a real servant's heart. So that those that work over you would get the glory. Someone has said it doesn't really matter who gets the glory. When you have that philosophy for serving, God will honor that attitude. Joseph didn't care who got the glory, and so Potiphar was relieved of worry. Now, I'm building a case on this because I want you to know that Potiphar trusted him without reservation with things in his home. We have had the joy, as many of you have had the joy, of sharing our home with individuals that were not born into our family. And we have known the joy of trusted people who live with us. I suppose the thing people fear the most is the loss of privacy. But when you have somebody that you can trust, you don't sense your privacy is lost at all. As a matter of fact, you feel that your home is blessed because of their presence. And you trust that individual, whether it is with your wife or with your husband, with your children, or with your belongings. Now, that's the way it was with Potiphar. He never went to work in the morning wondering, can I really trust Joseph to do the job? It never dawned on him that there would be a problem. It says that he didn't concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now that's really living. The only worry is, what are we going to have for supper? What's going to be for breakfast or lunch? Sounds like some of the husbands here tonight, doesn't it? You think that's all they're concerned about. Now this man had no other worry than what's coming next on the table. Now you might wonder why the writer adds in the narrative the last part of verse 6, but it sets the tone for the picture that fits into the frame. It says, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. The Living Bible says, Joseph, by the way, was a very handsome young man. The Hebrew text reads, Joseph was well-built and good-looking. Now, you might wonder, why do we emphasize that? I emphasize it because that is all that Mrs. Potiphar noticed about the servant that Potiphar hired in the home. She was occupied with a good build and with good looks, and she wanted it for her own. And now the plot thickens. Verse 7, let's begin the story as it is unfolded for us in Holy Scripture. It came about after these events, and that is an eloquent phrase. After when? After he had reached the top, after Joseph had been appointed over the household and had been given the unreserved trust of his employer. It came about after he had reached success. It came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. You remember this morning when we talked about the three ingredients of temptation? We talked about the bait, we talked about the desire, and we talked about the allurement that draws the desire to the bait. Remember that? In the eyes of Mrs. Potiphar, Joseph was the bait. The lustful desire was for him, for his body, for the pleasurable delight of sharing in intimacy with this man. And the alluring approach that she used was extremely direct. For it says in verse 7, she said to him, "Lie with me." Friend, that is a direct approach to the situation. Historians and archaeologists tell us from their digs that at this time, Egyptian women were as liberated as the American woman. The Egyptian woman knew a liberation that no other woman knew of that day, and perhaps no other woman has known until our day. So you can appreciate the liberty of this woman. She was a liberated woman. She was living in the lap of luxury. She wanted more than she should have had, and so she reached out in hopes of getting it. And she said to him, "I want you." Verse 8. And I appreciate the response of Joseph so very much. It says that he refused. Now, will you notice his refusal was based on two appeals. He appealed first to her reason. He appealed next to her conscience. Look at this with me. Verse 8. He refused and he said to her, that is, to his master's wife, "Behold, with me around, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife." That's reasoning with lust. He said to her, "It is not reasonable that I break the trust that there has been established between your master and me. To do so, to take part in this, will inevitably lead me to a destruction that I do not want to experience. I appeal to you on the basis of reason. I refuse." And then he appeals on the basis of conscience. He says in verse 9, "How could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Now, needless to say, this woman did not have any place in her life for God. Nevertheless, Joseph had a great place in his life for God. And so he said to her, "I have a relationship with the Lord, and if I involve myself in this, that will be severed. I will undergo a terrible experience. How can I do this before my God?"
It's one of those days when we wish we had another half hour to hear the remainder of Chuck Swindoll's message, How to Say No When Lust Says Yes. He'll make a closing comment in just a moment, and we'll hear the complete conclusion on Thursday's edition of Insight for Living. Now, there is a way, of course, that you can hear Chuck's message in its entirety and without interruption. You can either purchase the 4 CDs in this mini-series, or you can download the audio files right now. Just go to insightworld.org and look for Staying Pure in a World Gone Wild. Remember, too, that you can take Chuck's teaching with you wherever you go by connecting to the new mobile website. It's a convenient way to call up Insight for Living right from your smartphone web browser by bookmarking mobile.insight.org. And then time is running out to take advantage of the exclusive publication from Insight for Living called Women in the Life of Jesus. It's instructional, it's entertaining, and it'll open your eyes to lessons on life illustrated through the lives of women who actually met Jesus face to face. Be ready to take down the contact information and make your request today. Chuck?
Just imagine what it must have been like to encounter Jesus face to face. Can you picture that? Meeting the Lord at your deepest level of need? Well, the Gospels describe many of those encounters. Often they're colorful conversations with Christ. We've chosen to highlight several of those classic moments. in a one-of-a-kind publication we've titled Women in the Life of Jesus. Whether you're single or married, separated or widowed, divorced, a mother, a grandmother, at any stage or status of life, these powerful life-changing encounters offer long-lasting lessons for each one of us today. Presented in an engaging magazine-style format with all the practical and biblical content you've come to rely on at Insight for Living, I'd like to get this publication into your hands and the hands of everyone listening to the sound of my voice right now. It's called Women in the Life of Jesus.
To get a copy, here's all you need to do. The publication is yours when you give a donation of any amount. In fact, when you make your request today, we'll send two copies to you, one for you and one to give away. Your gift today is needed. It's applied first to providing Chuck's teaching right here, and then a portion of your donation helps us reach others across this country and even around the world. Please remember to tell us where you hear the program. Choose one of three ways to connect with Insight for Living. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. That's 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org. Tomorrow, from Chuck Swindoll, more about how to say no when lust says yes on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, How to Say No When Lust Says Yes, was copyrighted in 1974, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2011 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.